Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 246 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and I am joined by my friend Levon, better known as Barcelev on Twitter, and he joins me for what is a jam-packed show. How you doing, Levon?
I'm good, Dan. How about yourself?
I'm all right. It has been an up-and-down day. If you're listening to this on the Monday when we're recording it, you know that we were going to record this on Sunday. I'm glad we didn't, because there's plenty of news. And we're going to get to all of that, but we are going to start by talking Barça-Sevilla first. That is the match that was the 2-0, and then the match that will be in the Copa del Rey second leg. Then we'll move to the on-the-field stuff, including the recent presidential debate and another Barça president getting in a cop car, which is not that uncommon, unfortunately, in the 21st century. But let's start with the stuff off the field, or rather on the field first. Yeah, on the field, there we go. Barça have Sevilla in the Copa del Rey second leg down 2-0, but they did pull out the 2-0 win on Saturday, and they did it with a new formation too. The 3-5-2 obviously worked rather well. There was a clean sheet as well as two goals scored. But do you think, Levon, that Ronald Koeman will try to replicate it again on Wednesday?
He might. I mean, it worked against Sevilla. It's the second time that we played it. I think we beat 3-0. We beat Valladolid 3-0 before with a 3-5-2, which was one of those first games in which we really saw that connection between Pedri and Messi that everybody was talking about. I'm not sure if he'll do it again, but since Sevilla really did not have an antidote, Lopetegui did not come up with anything in order to counter that 3-5-2 this weekend. So why not? It makes sense for this match.
Well, I think the why not would probably be what the importance of Pedri is in that system. But in all honesty, though, the more I thought about it, he winds up being more important in that 4-3-3 because of the defensive job that he does have in that 4-3-3. So the argument as to with Pedri, who was out for 2 weeks with that calf injury, unfortunately, you think about the different options to replace him, whether it's Riqui Puig. You know, we can do the Ias Mariba now, or we could do it later, depending on what you want to do. But Ias Mariba, who came on as a substitute instead of Riqui Puig on Saturday, but I don't really know if it's instead of. Let's do this now. Let's get into it. I'm not surprised if we see Ias Mariba starting against Sevilla over Miralem Pjanic. We don't even know if he'll be back in time. So the only other player, and this is because Carlos Alenya is out on loan at Hetafe, and there really aren't any other options in terms of how this squad was built. So Ias Mariba was trusted. He came in, did well. We saw what he did against Alaves, which I consider, again, a 98% good, and then the one, obviously, terrible mistake, whatever, and that's going to happen. And I'm glad that happened against Alaves in a blowout win. You almost never expect him to make that kind of mistake again at first team level. As an 18-year-old, I think he has a different profile. And in recent weeks, people have heard me talk about and praise the fact that with Barca B, he is not this midfielder that everybody thinks he is, but he is a player that, and why I think he got those minutes, not over Puig, but because in that game, in that 3-5-2, it was calling out for a midfielder to win the aerial duels, to win the second balls, and when you're playing that 3-5-2, you have to win the second balls. And Barca did that very, very well in a way that they haven't really done too much this season in other formations. And Busquets this season, when Barca are winning the second balls, he looks really good. When Barca aren't winning the second balls, then he looks a step slow, and Barca look a step slow, and they look defensively frail. So they were winning those second balls, and Ias Mariba with Barca B has done that very well. The fact that he's getting assists, even for Barca B, he doesn't really do that too often. He has the one goal, he has a couple assists, but he's not really that attacking midfielder as everyone thinks he is, like a Paul Pogba. He really is a box-to-box midfielder at Barca B, and that's a job that Koeman is tasking him to do, and that is to win those second balls. So I would not be surprised at all if you saw Ias Mariba start this match, but it's a matter of personnel as well.
Right. I think there are a couple of things there that are interesting. One is that the second balls are not necessarily won by Ilex Moriba, but when you press as a team, that puts the opponent under pressure that their passes are less accurate, and that is also a way to get those second balls. So yeah, Ilex is more physical, so people focus on that, but Pedri presses very well without being physical. When he was subbed out against Sevilla, he had actually only had 26 attempted passes. So in 70 minutes for a midfielder of his profile in that position in the center of the pitch, that is very low. So but he makes a lot of yards. However, Ricky Puig also likes to press. And he does so quite well. He's very fast, a lot faster than people give him credit for. So we'll see. I also think what you mentioned was very interesting, that Koeman did not seem to care at all about the mistake that Elex made against, was it Alaves? So that was very nice to see. And it will be interesting to see what he's going to do. I don't think Pjanic is going to play. I would not at all be surprised if it's Moriba, but he might not even go for 3-5-2, in which
Right.
case we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you can't honestly think that it's going to be Griezmann on the bench in two big important matches, right? And that's
Right.
been the issue with Griezmann this season, that when he went on that fine form in January and February, you see the detractors now saying, well, look who was on the schedule. Look who Barcelona wound up getting 14 straight results against. You can't really say that they've won that big match this season, other than when Real Sociedad was near the top of the table, and there was that win in a few months ago, and then this win against Sevilla. Those are the two biggest matches that Barca got major points out of this season. And yeah, they got the draw earlier with Sevilla in the season, but Sevilla were worse than they were, and Barca were still kind of going through the wrong thing. But to the point, back to Griezmann, that we saw that 3-5-2. What was best about Dembélé was his verticality. That we saw this him run into spaces that aren't necessarily available to him. And then even looking at the heat map, Dest was farther forward than anybody else as a wing back. And so it wasn't a matter of playing a 3-5-2 with Dembélé as a wing back on the left, or Griezmann as that wing back on the left or right. You are actually playing two full backs as your wing back. So that means that in that formation, there is really no place for Martin Braithwaite, especially with playing with Messi, and there really is no place for Griezmann. So, I mean, you can't possibly make me believe it, that Koeman is going to leave Griezmann on the bench for two straight matches, in two big matches, even if that is what, I mean, might be best for the largest number of players in the squad. And I guess, Levan, the bigger question, I know you respond to Griezmann, but the issue all season long that Francesa and I go on and on and on about when you talk about formation, Koeman's ideas, how do you get the best out of the largest number of players in the squad? Because it's a squad that Messi said over the summer it doesn't all the way make sense, and it won't make sense because you have a lot of parts that it just doesn't fit one system or one fluid way. That you have players like, again, Griezmann and Coutinho will never really fit with Messi. It's not the profile player they are. And Dembélé playing off Messi only makes sense when you have an Ansu Fati or another winger on the other side, right? So it's never really a solution that I don't think Koeman. And people all keep getting on me that I'm defending Koeman, but it's a matter of no matter what the manager would be, you have a squad that was never really going to perfectly fit together, and Koeman's had to try out a million different things based on the situation as to what he could possibly try to get the best out of.
I think the 4-2-3-1 made a lot of sense. That it did not work might be the formation, or it might just be simple squad dynamics or any other number of reasons. I completely forgot about Griezmann. My first thought when Pedri went out and after the match, I thought, well, then Messi will slide back into midfield in Pedri's slot, and it will be Griezmann and Dembélé up top. Griezmann is actually a lot better at making those runs and especially finishing when he receives a through ball, because that's actually one of Dembélé's weaknesses. He generally does not like to receive the ball into space. He likes to receive it at his feet, and if there's space behind the defender, he can then dribble past him and take advantage of the space. But he does not like to make that run and then finish off through balls that are being fed to him. The question then becomes, of course, if Messi plays where we saw Pedri on the weekend, then in attack he can create a lot of danger there because of being Messi, of course. But he cannot defend as well as Pedri, and much less a prolonged effort. So it will be interesting to see what Koeman does. Another thing that he could do is he could try Griezmann in that slot, although in the midfield slot, I mean. But I don't know how that would work out.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it does make a bit of sense in that the defensive responsibilities for Messi playing just off the shoulder of Dembele, that press worked rather well. I think that was arguably the best pressing 90 minutes we saw from Messi this season, potentially. And,
yeah,
and it's not a matter of intensity, or rather, it was that we've seen in previous matches against Athletic Club, even though it was a loss in the Spanish Super Cup, Messi was working hard in that match, but the team was not pressing in unison together. And it's interesting to note as well that in that 3-5-2, we haven't mentioned Frankie de Jong, who was one of the best players in January and February and was really thriving as that box-to-box midfield in the 4-3-3. Now, he takes a much more reserved role, and in the same way of that 4-2-3... And I guess to say, we're getting in the weeds of formations, but it's fine to get in these conversations when you have a formation change. That in that 4-2-3-1, we thought on paper that Busquets and De Jong together would make sense. And yet, mm-hmm. in that 3-5-2, now that actually does make sense with Busquets and De Jong together, because De Jong is allowed to offensively in possession have that space. And I've been talking in recent weeks about, and I'll keep talking about it, in that rest defense, as what are the positions of the Barca players right before they lose the ball? So when Messi dribbles straight up the middle, and you saw against Sevilla, that's what made Barca so defensively sound, that when Messi had all that coverage in the middle of the field right behind him, that it wasn't worrying about getting in the positions to get out that counterattack, it wasn't running back into your spots, it was that Barca were already set up with that rest defense, that the minute Messi lost the ball up ahead, it's low risk, high reward, where Messi, if he can dribble past five, as he did on, leading to an almost goal by whoever it was. I don't remember who it was. I think it was maybe Death Shot. So on the Death Shot, when they were setting a possession in the final third, Messi winds up dribbling past four, and now you've got a shot on goal. Clear shot. Clear target. Barca just didn't finish. And when he did lose the ball in those circumstances, in earlier weeks in that 4-3-3, now you're hoping that Pedri and De Jong were in the right positions. But if De Jong had made a run to the box, and then Messi loses the ball, now you've got a problem on your hand, and it's Busquets in a one-on-one counterattack situation. But in that 3-5-2, you have Busquets able to always set up and in complete preparation for the counterattack. And as much as people want to say he's lost a step, sure, he's lost a step. But he also, the thing between the ears hasn't aged at all. The thing between the ears still knows where he needs to be on those counterattacks. Sometimes physically he just can't get to those spots, but in that 3-5-2, he's always going to be able to get into that spot because he's able to read the game so well when Messi is going to give up the ball, and he doesn't have to need to help offensively in that way up the middle.
Exactly. I think the other thing with the 3-5-2 is, apart from it working well against Sevilla, long term it's not really an option for Koeman.
Right.
So it might work well now, but if you say, okay, I'm going to stick with that that formation, then, you know, when Ansu Fati is back, you're going to have both, or you're going to have two of Ansu Fati, Griezmann, and Dembele on the bench. And that just doesn't make sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So that's another problem with that formation.
Yeah, I mean, it's this odd thing that we can argue all this season, and this is, you know, for Frances, he always feels like he's saying the same thing week in and week out, because we are, where you're looking ahead to next season, and mm-hmm. Ansu Fati is arguably, I mean, as he was in the first 2 months, aside from Messi, whether or not Messi is staying or leaving, Ansu Fati is the most important offensive player that Barcelona have. So getting the best out of Ansu Fati is going to be priority number one over Dembele and Griezmann and Coutinho, if whichever ones are still around at the club next season. So it's interesting that Ansu Fati and all of these experiments are happening without him, where when he was around, he only played in that 5-2-3-1. I mean, in that 4-2-3-1. So we haven't seen him in the 3-5-2. We haven't seen him in the 4-3-3. You'd think that Ansu Fati on the left in that 4-3-3 is going to be absolutely devastating. And those chances that he does, I mean, his chance finishing rate is very, very high, much higher than Griezmann, mm-hmm. much, much higher than Dembele. So you're thinking about all the chances. And that was the issue against Sevilla the first time. Barca didn't play poorly in the first leg of the Copa del Rey. Sevilla finished their chances through some really, as I said, individual efforts from Koundé. I mean, what a goal that was. Hats off to him.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But Barca, if they had finished their chances, it's a different tie. It wasn't that Sevilla blew Barca out 2-0. And Ansu Fati, if he's there, Barca finished those chances. So I don't know as much it's a system problem as much as it's just Barca don't finish as often as they should.
Well, we don't finish as much as we should, although that our finishing is not as bad as the first couple of months of the season.
For sure.
And the other one is all of the gimmies that we give up in our defense, which is just absurd. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a season where we have conceded so many goals because of defensive errors. The thing with Ansu Fati is that, and this is very interesting, we have Messi, and Messi used to be impossible to defend. Now he's just difficult to defend, mm-hmm. but he used to be impossible to defend. We have Dembélé, and defending Dembélé is also a nightmare. However, Ansu Fati, he's a little bit like Cristiano Ronaldo. You can defend him, and you can keep him quiet, but he's going to score.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he has this innate ability to just pop up right at the exact right time and put the ball in the net. So I think that if we're talking long term, to have Dembélé on the right, Ansu Fati on the left, and then whoever we're going to end up having in the middle could be very interesting. But ideally, you have somebody in the middle who defenders have to worry about.
Hey everyone, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. On top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you for just the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports podcasting experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Join. Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's going to be, as far as what the attacking talent is for Barcelona, it continues to be the question of who can you get the best out of? And it's a hierarchy of, if you're getting the best out of Messi, I mean, and throwing Fati out for a second because he's not available, neither is Coutinho. But if you're getting the best out of Messi and Dembélé and De Jong and Pedri, that's enough, right? You don't necessarily need to be getting the best out of Griezmann and Brathwaite. You never have a system mm-hmm. around Brathwaite, right? As long as you can get the best out of X number of players, you're fine. And I think when you talk about system, what's been so positive, and I went on a radio show this past week that will be out, I'll plug it whenever it comes out. And I talked about the academy, and I came on, it was not a Barca related thing. And so when you speak about the academy, the La Masia is seen with obviously great reverence, but I think over the last 6-7 years, because of Sergio Roberto being the final one to come from, and then Ricky Puig having trouble breaking through, and XY, all these different things. And obviously Ansu Fati, they go, well, you know, it's, I don't think they almost see Ansu Fati as a academy product, even though he severely is, right? And he's a testament to the academy. Okay. So obviously on the Barcelona podcast, we are biased to saying that I watch Juvenil A matches. I watch occasional Juvenil B matches. I watch Barcelona B. And I'm telling you that there is still so much talent in La Masia. And I've been doing that for 2-3 years as these players aren't breaking through. Now comes this moment where it seems like the dam is starting to break. And I don't think this is a fake thing that Frances says a lot, that if 2 or 3 Barcelona B generational players break through, you can still build a team that way. And it's then the rest of it is all you add the rest of the talent elsewhere, because to be a global brand and be a global Champions League competing, like, you can't possibly get all these players from the Catalonia region, you know, around the world. It's a global game. You cannot possibly get that kind of collection of talent in such a small space. It doesn't happen. Anyway.
It doesn't have a quick question.
Yeah.
Are you talking about 2 or 3 players breaking through per season or per generation?
Well, somewhere in between. In between. I mean, I can't speak for Frances. Again, that's why he's on the show normally. But for me, it's that I hope to see every 2 to 3 years, 2 to 3 players break through. So it's not necessarily 1 year per year, one per year, but if Barcelona, and it doesn't have to be the starters. That's the other point, too, that Carlos Alenya can be player 24 out of a 25-man squad. And you've got a good player at your 22nd to 24th best player. And the same argument can be made for Oscar Mingueza and Elias Moriba. And this is why I bring this up. Elias Moriba has been touted for quite a few years now. And I've done my best, as people who've read Barca blog, whatever, not to overhype this kid. Because there is certainly, especially if you watched him last year with Barca B. It was his first year with Barca B when he really was still juvenile age. Obviously, he's only 18 now. So he was 17 with Barca B in the third division. He didn't really look like he was fitting. It was the first time in his career where the players on the other side of him were 35 years old, and they were just as strong, just as fast, and these were athletes that he had to get used to, having always been one of the biggest and strongest players at every level, right? And the way that he's adapted this season and seemingly found himself in the third division, which is a different player than he was, as I said, when he was the biggest player on the field. He could do whatever he wanted. He could score goals, long-range shots, whatever. Now he has to find his spots. He takes long shots occasionally, but he has to find and pick his moments. But regardless of all that, Elias Moriba, because of his size, because of what he was showing even with the ball at his feet, was always considered a future star. That's why he's the best-paid player in the academy. I mean, yeah. Barca have earmarked him as a guy, right? So you hope that Elias Moriba down the line, in 5 years' time, he's a starting midfielder. That's what you hope for Barcelona. He's a starter. Oscar Mingueza, though, I mean, I watched him for years, and listeners of the pod know I've said this, that I watched him for 2 or 3 years with Barca B, and I thought that this or last season was going to be his final one at the club. He was the third or fourth option at center back for the B team last year. He was also the backup right back. So he would come off the bench a lot, or there was a lot of injuries, so he would start in time. This was never who Oscar Mingueza was. He was always his player who was just on the fringes of the B team. And now you tell me that he plays so well and he finds his spots. And it's just weird. I don't want to go into dogma here, right? I don't want to say that, hey, you just got to give these kids a chance, because Mingueza hadn't really earned the opportunity with the first team. But now, because of an emergency, he winds up becoming what is a really promising first team player. Do I ever think he's going to be a starter? I don't think so. But if Oscar Mingueza is your backup right back, you're in a good spot. If he's your backup, or if he's your fourth choice center back and your backup right back, you've got a good player in your hands. And I think that's just been a testament to the academy, saying that you can both get the future star in Elias Moriba, but you can also find a rotation player. And it's not necessarily every player has to be a star. And that's why a lot of players leave, because they think they're going to be the star. But if you can get the fringe players to come up from the academy as well, then that's the true power of the academy, to get both your stars and those fringe players, depending on the generations.
Yeah, I think Oscar Mingueza, he's probably like the happiest person in the whole world right now. Like every night he goes to bed and he's like still squeezing his arm. Like, is this really happening?
Yeah.
I mean, even at a level so high as the Barcelona youth system, where they scout and they get the best kids in Catalonia, and not just the best kids in Catalonia, but also some of the best people, best young players in Spain from a very young age, like Ansu Fati, for example. It's not a coincidence that Ansu Fati ended up in Barcelona. They went to Sevilla when, how old was he? 10 years old? 11
years
old?
Yeah, he was discovered by Barcelona at 9, and then he came to the academy at, I think, 11. And same with Gabi, who just made his Barca B debut. He's a Real Betis product. So, yeah, right. And at Sevilla, so, that bloodline, too. Juan Miranda is another one. So, those are all from the Sevilla region, yeah.
So even at that level of excellence and talent, the amount of kids that make it, not even at Barca, but in professional football,
Is maybe
one or two per team. So to expect somebody to break through every year, that might be a bit much. And I don't care if it's a future starter or a squad player, to break through and be there to stay for the next 5-10 years, I think that's a bit much. I think systematically we have to do a lot better than we have done the last 10 years. So the ones who are truly talented, like Thiago, you need to keep them. The ones who are talented enough for a backup role, like Grimaldo, he should have stayed at least a couple of seasons instead of getting Digne. But I also think it's generational. So it's normal that after the amazing generation of Xavi, Puyol, Iniesta, and after that came Messi, Piqué, and Cesc. They're kind of overlapping generations. To get that kind of talent is not normal. Like, it just does not.
Right.
That happens maybe once in a lifetime. So now to see kids like Ansu Fati break through and push, who I still think has enormous talent, and you have all these kids in the background, like what's the Moroccan kid? He's 16, Juvenil A, but he's getting some games in Barça B as
Yeah, yeah, Issa Komash. I mean, yeah, he's 16. He's got magic at his feet. Yeah, for sure.
And so on and so on. Like, let's hope we take advantage of it. At the same time, then I see all these people who say, well, you know, if we lose Collado, it's a disaster. Jandro, he has to play now. Yeah, but hold on. Like, what do you want? You're still a club like Barca still needs to compete. Mm-hmm. You cannot put 20, 18, 19, 20-year-olds out there. That's not going to work. So not all of them are going to make it. And even some of the talented ones will probably need to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I've argued this year was that Collado was directly competing with Trincao, and Trincao, you paid what you did for him. So Trincao's going to get those minutes. And I think Trincao has... Trincao's also a year younger than Collado as well, should be mentioned. So while Collado, as I've even said, even against Ieda yesterday, he was the best player on the field. He's been the best player in the third division this season, has Alex Collado. However, he's, again, having to break in. He got injured at the beginning of preseason, and Barca had bought Trincao, so that's what he was competing with. Well, my argument for Jandro Orellana, who doesn't necessarily have the same potential maybe that Collado does, it's looked like, because Pjanic hasn't been the answer, that you're looking for a successor to fill in for Busquets. And so it's a matter of need. So why has Mingueza gotten an opportunity over Collado? Well, it's because Barcelona needed Mingueza profile. Why is Ias Moriba now getting his opportunity? Well, that's because Ias Moriba he makes sense that because Pjanic was injured, Ias Moriba sees his opportunity. And that's why we're seeing Ias Moriba, because Pjanic was hurt. And so, I mean, that's what it is. It's merely getting opportunities. And same thing with Ansu Fati. Ansu Fati was only called up because of injuries in the preseason. So then you got Ansu Fati, and then he scores that, what was it? He scored the first goal, I believe it was on Osasuna. So he gets a header against Osasuna, and he puts himself on the map, and then he scores 5 goals in the first 2 months, and you're like, oh, okay, he's a first-team player. You can't argue. And Ias Moriba might do the same thing. If he goes out and starts against Sevilla in that second leg of the Copa del Rey, and he winds up having this, not even a great performance, but Barca wind up getting a result, and he wound up being an important player, then he's a first-team player, maybe now. I mean, that's what he gets. He gets paid to be a first-team player, unlike Jandro Orellana, right, who's expected to be maybe a player to break through, and he's going to have to wait and be patient. Well, yeah, I'll give you a final point on this, and then we're going to move on to the election. Final point for you.
To be fair on this, Koeman does a pretty good job at not really caring who gets paid what. So Koeman will happily bench Miralem Pjanic to play Ilex Moriba.
Which obviously makes everybody, I mean, giddy, right?
Of course.
We lose our minds when that happens, of course.
And before you move on, there's one anecdote, since we're talking about young players. Mm-hmm. I missed Ansu Fati's debut.
Oh, no.
It was the first match in the Camp Nou. I went to the beach with my family, with my wife and my daughter. And we have to take the train to go to the beach, because we don't go to the beach in the city, because it's just filled with tourists. So we go a bit further out. Mm-hmm. And I told him, well, you know, it's the first match of the season. You know, I'm going to leave you guys early, and I'm going to go watch the game, right? My wife's like, yeah. So I do exactly what I say. At some point, I say, okay, well, I'll see you guys at home. And I go to the stadium. I arrive at the stadium. I'm at the gates, and then I realized that I left my carnet, my season tickets, at home. I was like, oh my God, the first game of the season, I'm going to miss it, because I'm such an idiot that I left the thing at home.
Yeah.
I'm not going to walk home and then come back, even though it's like 20 minutes. It's like, you know, I ended up just watching the game at the bar, because I didn't want to miss the beginning. So in the end, I actually missed Ansu Fati's debut.
Yeah, I mean, we've all been there. I think in college for basketball, I covered the basketball team. I was at every basketball game, and then I had like a little bit of a fever where I wasn't really feeling great, so I stayed in bed. And then there was a 75-foot buzzer beater at the end to win it.
Oh my God!
From the other half, he from almost the other basket, our best player throws it up, you know, 80 feet, 75 feet, and everyone, like, my roommate, I could hear my roommate screaming from the gym, but I'd been at every game. I mean, I covered the team, I did play-by-play, and yeah, isn't that,
it was
insane. Nuts. These moments always happen. These are the ones you remember, yeah, because you weren't there to remember them, but you remember them seemingly better. So, going from that excitement to what is a little less exciting, but I don't know, somehow more important. It's less exciting, but more important, is everything going on with the presidential election. Again, we're going to end with the Bartomeu stuff, but I want to do the election because Francesca and I have spoken in depth about the upcoming elections and the three candidates in Joan Laporta, Victor Font, and Tony Freixa. But regular listeners know that Francesca and I don't actually have a vote. As much as we love it, as much as we care, we actually don't have a vote because of we are not official socios.
Most people don't have a vote.
Yeah. Because we're not located. But you, my friend, are in Barcelona, and my guest today does have a vote. So he won't be revealing who he's voting for. Don't worry about that. You can bother him.
I haven't decided yet.
He hasn't, right. He's figuring it out. And we're going to figure out exactly why he's still figuring out, because that's between him and his ballot. But he did watch the recent debate that Laporta did take part in. Unlike the first one, when it was just Freixa against Font, Laporta took part in this one. So it is great and perfect timing to have you discuss this and give Francesca a week off. So I'm going to ask you the hard one first. This is a difficult question. Aside from the obvious stuff about what he said, blah, 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 blah. And we saw a lot in the debate that it was a lot of Xavi this, Xavi that, yada, 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 right? There's this oversimplification, I think, that Laporta is nostalgia and he's going to show you what he did in 03 and he's going to, you know, solve all the problems again as the white knight that he is. That Font is trying to push a project and in recent weeks and months, that project has begun to fall apart because of the belief he's had in certain people to be part of that project. And then Freixa is the one that is hoping that his connections with Catalan society and what he has as far as the connections with current Barca are enough to kind of get him through. Or that seems to be the oversimplification. And so your reaction is fair to that oversimplification. And I think all that stuff that I mentioned is kind of negative. So I would ask you first, what positives do you see in each of these campaigns? You can go one by one if you'd like.
No, yeah. And the reason I'm not saying anything is I'm thinking about Freixa.
Right. Well, I was going to set you up in that. It's fair that Freixa is not.
To Freixa's credit, I don't know if you saw the video of Laporta hugging the empty mannequin with Messi's shirt.
We did see it. Many of those in our Facebook listener group did see that. Yes.
Yeah. So on Twitter, it's just that video, but it was actually a documentary here on Catalan TV, where all three candidates were asked, were put in front of that shirt and asked, "Hey, what would you do if reenact your first conversation with Messi?" And I thought Laporta I thought it was a bit embarrassing for a grown man to start hugging his shirt. Victor Font kind of like stumbled through it, did not really impress either. But Freixa had the dignity not to talk to a mannequin, but just to look at the camera and say, "Hey, you know, Messi is the best player that we've ever had. And I have nothing but words of thanks towards Messi." So what I can say in favor of Freixa is in that particular sequence that lasted less than 1 minute of his life, he left with his dignity intact.
Terrific. Okay, so I should have phrased my question a little better, that this, while the election is, it appears that Joan Laporta is going to be the favorite. What is the discussion currently going on? Again, the word project is being thrown out, I think, improperly, where if you're the favorite, it's politics 101 to keep your plan close to the vest. Why would you put something out there for criticism if what you're doing, as in not doing anything, is going to lead you to the presidency? So it's completely fair that Laporta has not come forward with his project. Though with the debate, I think he's been prodded a little bit more to say, "Hey, there's a problem." And Font and Laporta are the two that have, obviously there's three candidates, but we've known from the beginning that they're trying to have, they're trying to put forth ideas, and they will put forth ideas to try to get Barca out of the financial issues they're currently having. So what are the projects? If you were asked, and this is what I'm asking you, if you were asked, what is Laporta's project? I'll do that, then we'll do Font. So we'll do them separately even. What is Laporta's project? And what has he been said that not only what he's going to try to do, but what is his current project?
I don't know.
Right. Maybe that's true.
I still don't know. His financial project, there's something about, I don't know if it's bonds, or that people can buy that will help the club get out of debt. but I'm not good at economics and I'm not sure how that works. So then you have some candidates who say, no, this is not possible. It puts it at even more risk. Laporta says, no, you're lying. It does not put us on risk. This is something that maybe you have the wrong guest, but 99% of us who will talk about this actually do not know enough about economics to know whether that is going to work or not. And the more you read about it, the less you know.
Mm-hmm. No, that's completely fair. Yeah, but
you know,
but going back to the politics of it, that I mean, that it's fine that it's unknown, because again, the unknown still supports Laporta's case, right? Yeah. That you'd rather it's about, do you trust him? Are you willing to trust him as they once did? And then Font, when I say, what is Font's project? Then obviously there's a little more detail there.
I mean, with Font also, you don't know until it happens, because Font talks a lot about multimedia, but as crazy as I am about Barca, I'm not going to pay for a Barca app on my phone. If Barca decides, we're going to ask everybody 10 cents a month or 1 euro a month to follow our Twitter account, I'm going to say, forget about it.
Right.
So I don't really know how much his plan of modernizing our club will actually help us or not. Freixa wants to sell Barca corporate for 250 million. First of all, I don't think he can. And second of all, I think that if he does, then the only reason that somebody would invest that money is because they expect to get better off of it in the long run, which leaves us without future income in the long run. A lot of what Laporta claims is that, you know, he has experience in turning the club around, both on a financial level and the sporting project. Doesn't mean that he will repeat it. Well, I much prefer Laporta over the people who have been running the club the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So if I have to choose between Laporta and what we had, it's a no-brainer. but then again, does Laporta have the humility to realize that when he turned the club around, it was not him by himself, but it was him and an amazing team, many of whom are not here anymore.
Not only that, but working against it. No. I mean, when you talk about going all the way back to the Catalan academies, the fact that Man City, which is, we don't talk about their ownership group, but because they have a stake in Girona, they have scouts in Catalonia as deep as what Barcelona has at the moment. I mean, and I'm not talking even Girona, but they obviously, with Ferran Soriano and Chiqui Pagiristain, they're looking to Catalonia as a region that Man City is almost trying to take as their territory as well in terms of scouting. When you look at the number of young Spanish talent there. So it's not even that Laporta had this great team then, but this team is now working for clubs in direct opposition of what he's trying to put forward. And to that point about Laporta too, this is, again, the credit to him, I think, is deserved, is that he was president at a time when there was a global recession going on. And so his connections to Catalan business and we'll say the Catalan elites of the time were able to create some kind. I mean, he did have to make the connections, if you will, to bring that team into his club. And can he create a team similar to that again? We're not sure until it happens. And then the other part of Laporta is that the reason Barcelona were able to thrive so much with revenue is that because he did, and his team had the proper, they took chances. They listened to Johan Cruyff and they took chances, and the sporting project worked. And when the sporting project worked and Messi became the global superstar that he did and Champions Leagues were coming, then revenue was increased. And so if Barcelona have a sporting project that winds up winning 3 out of 4 Champions Leagues or whatever it may be, 2 in the next 4 years after next season, now the revenue is resolved. However, and I think the worrying sign to me, and this is going to directly connect to the Bartomeu stuff, the most worrying sign about the finances of the club are not Barcelona in 5 to 10 years. It's Barcelona and the short-term debt that they're currently worrying with. Now, this is what I dug into in recent weeks, that short-term debt and what Barcelona do in the next 365 days is so terrifying. And that is what made the delay of the election of 4 months so terrifying as well. Those are the two parts that actually, I think, in the long run, are still going to be the scars that the club are left with, that because... And even though a president can come in, there's only so much that a president can do. But I do know that behind the scenes, a president can sign off on ideas that other people who are still working with good faith at the club are trying to put forward. They cannot get approval until the president comes in. So there are things in the works that are are so close that aren't necessarily just, we're not talking about Bartomeu and his Goldman Sachs loan. We're talking about other things related to the club that are just waiting for approval and just waiting for institutional belief that a president will bring. And it goes, it takes us all the way back to the start of the club with Juan Gamper, where Juan Gamper wound up being this bigger figurehead, not in a Florentino Perez kind of way, but because he had been a former player and he represented the club in that way. And there have been presidents over time in the club's history that have seemingly have come from within the club and moved up that way. And that's why everyone always says Gerard Piqué is a future president for that very reason. That's what they want, but it doesn't actually fit what's on paper. And Laporta saying, hey, I'm with the club because I was the club before, is what makes me the best candidate for this job now.
Yeah, and there might be something in there, in that, because also Laporta has a lot of charisma and he has a big personality. So What you might see happen is that players who would not be willing to lower their wages for, well, definitely not for Freixa.
Sure.
And maybe not for Font either. Laporta will be able to convince them because he's Laporta. The same if you ask me, hey, to lower the debt, who would I prefer to send out to negotiate the lowering of that debt? I think Laporta can probably get more done than Freixa, which is nobody likes and people take advantage of, or Victor Font. Now, that's just a hunch. What do I know?
Right. Well, what we do know is that the way it's been run and those negotiations, that's been the problem. That starting with Messi, because not to say that Messi didn't respect Bartomeu, but he didn't like Bartomeu. There was no incentive for Messi to, as much as he loves the club, there was no incentive for him to work with Bartomeu if he didn't want to work with Bartomeu. And that led to the wage issue, right. and that led to all the other players, I mean, collecting huge, huge wages, and it winds up being an issue. So I think the first instance that we know, because again, the president will be, it's supposed to be announced on Sunday night, so Barcelona time, so in the afternoon here in the U.S., I'll know who the new president of Barcelona is. Again, most likely Juan Laporta. I think the first test is, even though these numbers aren't entirely public, when Eric Garcia, who Pep Guardiola has said will be coming to Barcelona free transfer, if his wages become public and we see what his wages are and where he stacks up in that wage hierarchy, we are going to know exactly the kind of pull. I think that's the first test. That's the first time where I think we're going to hint as to how wages are going to look going forward, because that is certainly going to be, in the long run, the way to get this club back on right. Again, it doesn't solve the short-term debt. I'm really interested to see what happens. But what I do know is, regardless of which three is elected, here's a transition. Regardless of which of those three is elected, I can't imagine anyone doing a poorer job than the former president in Josep Bartomeu, who was today arrested in relation to the i3 venture scandal. The social media campaign, again, for those who were living under a rock, it was a social media campaign waged against players of the club. Now, he wasn't arrested. I want to make this clear because Twitter can confuse people. He wasn't arrested for his connection to the mean things he said. You cannot go to jail for being mean to people on Twitter. I think, Levon, you may have gotten 2 to 3 months based on some of your ornery comments sometimes, not at people. It's never directed at people like Bartomeu and his group. But yes, you cannot go to jail. Just so you're put to ease, Levon. You cannot go to jail for saying mean things about club legends on social media. But it does come down to the money. That's where the problem is. And now, an external audit had cleared the club of any wrongdoing, but the investigation with local police, the Catalan police, has still gone forward. And that's why we're seeing these arrests now. The issue for the reason him being jailed is the way that money that it was circulated was delivered to the company in question. So allegedly is the key word here, the club paid 1 million euros per year in 200,000 euro installments for work that was valued between 150 and 175,000 euros. And those payments were pulled from different departments around the club and then sent to different companies that are owned by a businessman named Carlos Hibanez. So him owning those different companies and then money going to from different departments to Barca into different companies, that obviously always financially is going to raise him from red flags. That's why the organized or the investigation is being done by the financial crime unit in Catalonia. That is the ones who are, that are going forth with this investigation. So the other problem would be that if the Catalan police believe that Bartomeu and those connected to him tampered with evidence, as in destroyed it as while this investigation was underway, that's why he and then CEO Oscar Grau and Masferrer, a former director, and then the club lawyer Roman Gomez Ponti. Those are the four names that were arrested as of today, and the Catalan police have said that there might be others who are collected as well, and they might not actually go to jail or be put to trial or whatever. whatever it is, like, everyone's going to be salivating at the mouth for. This might just be because the Catalan police raided the Barcelona office. And but say raided, they got the cooperation of the club. So it's not a raid. The club said, hey, you know, we want the full progress to play out. So they did give access. This wasn't a raid. They were given access to the documentation that the Catalan police wanted to look at. So that I think these four potentially were jailed in the short term so that there would be no tampering with evidence and that investigation would go forward. So I think it is innocent until proven guilty. But as you know, Levon, if I say innocent until proven guilty, that means that I side with Bartomeu, who I've said many, many unpleasant things about on the show. Yet, of course, it's siding with him if you say, yeah, guilty until proven innocent. Freudian slip there. Innocent until proven guilty. There we go. Yeah, so this is a complicated thing where, once again, it comes down to money and things we don't understand. But people are frothing at the mouth because, I mean, it seems like justice is coming, not for the club, because it's a terrible look for the club. Juan Laporta said it. I think he's the one who said it best, that this is a stain, another black mark on the club. This is not good. This is nothing, something to celebrate. But if justice is to be done, it helps close that chapter and put, we'll say, the evil of the club behind you. And to move forward into, it gives you a bright light. It starts a new chapter where Bartomeu's gone and he's getting punished for, he was the only evil thing at the club.
Somebody's going to sleep in prison tonight. It's not going to be me.
No.
Look, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
For the club. I was going to actually say that they are guilty until proven innocent, because we can all feel it. We've all seen what is going on with this club. I don't really think Laporta was 100% clean either. I don't know if we've ever had a president that has been 100% clean, mm-hmm. knowing that corruption is endemic in Spain, as it is in the United States, as it is in many countries. Although in the United States, this might not manifest itself so much with sports franchises, but here in Spain, football clubs are corrupt. So in this sense, it is not surprising. I don't think, or it would surprise me, if they found any evidence today. I can imagine that the people at the Barcelona offices were very cooperative with the police, because they've cleaned their file cabinets weeks, if not months ago, because Barça Gate is not new. What I'm curious about, somebody tweeted this earlier, is that there was an audit by PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Right, the external audit, yep.
And they signed off on this. And if you now hear how this was paid and how this was set up, I mean, how can you sign off on this?
Right.
So yeah, it will be interesting to see what's going to happen. I will not be sorry if Bartomeu spends a couple of years in prison. Not at all. I wish it'd be longer. He and Jose destroyed what could have been 10 of the most glorious years of our club, where we had a prime Lionel Messi. And if he goes down over something as ridiculous as a social media company sending out tweets to make him look good, to make some players not look all that great, yeah, let him go down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a calculation that, I mean, what is a tweet? I mean, I remember reading the tweet disparaging Carlos Puyol. I mean, what's the point? I mean, why waste your energy to put yourself in jeopardy, to put your reputation in jeopardy, to tweet out a mean thing about a person that is no longer even at the club because of the things that went on behind the scenes? Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's negative. It's not so great. But I think, again, as we started the show talking about the Barça Sevilla stuff and then going on to the club, again, the elections, like the election does not mean that everything is going to be great. There's a lot of problems to fix, but the idea, and I never disparage Culés from having hope. And that's what has survived the club from its Catalan roots on, that there's always hope. And it's not just when there's Messi, but when there's the academy that's been built, when you're built on the ideals and Mesquite club that Barça are meant to be built on. I'm excited at the notion that I'm not saying that Juan Laporta is that figurehead. It's not that he's an idol, but he represents a change of the page, if you will. And so my hope is that change of the page is that when people ask me, unlike in the last few seasons, when I go on another interview or another place and they ask me, oh, Mesquite and Club, what does that mean? Because now everyone's questioning what it means. I want to be able to clearly and distinctly say, I knew what it meant, and now I can confirm to you that that's exactly what it means. So that's what I want to be able to do. That's my mission for turning this page with the new election. So I think that'll wrap it up. Again, Levon, I want to say good luck in voting. I'm glad that you didn't have to make your mind up just yet. It's going to be between you and your ballot. So I think that'll wrap up another show, unless you want a final word.
I think whoever becomes president between Laporta and Font, it's going to be Laporta, obviously. I have hope that it will turn out well. I think there are risks to both of them, but let's sign off on hope tonight.
Agreed. So I think that'll wrap up another edition of the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can tap in your app and check out the show notes to subscribe. You can find us on social media. We're on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod, at HiltonD13 for me. But the man to follow is at Barcelav. That's BARSALEV on Twitter. And we are also on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. Closed Facebook group, tbpod.link/group. Deeper dive discussions and all that. And we're on Patreon. You can help us make these shows at tbpod.link/patreon. We're YouTube at the Barcelona Podcast. You can give us a subscribe over there so we can get to 10,000. And finally, yes, I can be found co-hosting The Locker Room on FC Barcelona's official Twitch page. That's been in the works for a few months. And to respond to the quick questions, I already did two shows, if you already saw that. So the two questions that I want to quickly respond to is no, that doesn't change anything over here with what the podcast. Obviously, what happens over here is what happens over here and what happens on the YouTube page, whatever. And no, I have no information, no connection to the club other than that. Levon, since you will be voting on the 7th, you still have the much closer connection to the club than I do to simply even co-hosting one of the shows. So I say enjoy the democracy. And Levon, thanks so much for joining me this week.
Thanks for inviting me.
So thanks to you for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, talk to you soon at Forza Barça.